never know.
I just discovered my underwear is on backwards.
That's really awesome.
That was really good. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Good time. Yeah.
Yeah, really. Whoa, so
guys, it's time.
Is it time?
Are we on yet?
Hello. Okay. Oh, hello, and welcome to The Clatch. I'm Linda Nygaard.
I'm Susan McCabe.
I'm Heidi Skrypek. Hello.
And we are here with a special guest today, Heidi Jackson, who's the executive director of Dove. Hi, Heidi.
Hi.
Well, you know, this is a place where we say what's on our minds. When we ask some big questions, offer a bit of humor, we hope. And I hope that some listeners out there are able to pull up a chair and clatch with us. So we're eating something today.
Ooh la la.
And
I smell ginger.
Yeah, it was a new recipe I tried. We have a one bowl carrot cake. And really, it wasn't one bowl. It was a couple of bowls and a big mess. But it worked out pretty well. It's the weirdest recipe in that you put the topping on before the cake is done. You just put it on in the oven, and then it's a light kind of, custardy.
Yes.
Yeah.
What else?
Yeah. I thought it was meringue.
Cheesecakey is what Other Heidi said.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Other Heidi.
Special guest Heidi.
Yeah.
I love it.
So anyway, it's a little treat for a coffee clutch.
Yes.
And here we are.
Yes, I think it's a necessity for a coffee clutch.
You say that every time.
I know, I'm lobbying.
Okay.
For more cooking. When you make a carrot cake, typically, not that recipe, how many bowls is it? Mega? I've never made one.
No, it's like one or two.
Oh, okay.
It's not a big deal. I don't know why one bowl carrot cake is a big deal, because it's, I don't know.
It's called marketing.
I just had to try it. And
well, it worked.
It did work. It did work.
It's lovely.
It's different. I prefer other carrot cake, I think, with the real cream cheese frosting.
Mm.
But this is cream cheese and sour cream.
Yeah, you know, this isn't very sweet.
No,
it's
not.
Yeah. I like that.
It's not very sweet. But it has a lot of ginger and a lot of cinnamon.
Yeah, it does.
So anyway, enjoy it.
Enjoying currently.
So COVID update. What's going on? How are you feeling about COVID? Susan, what's happening with you?
Well, I have discovered there is a serious shortage that has been created by the pandemic.
What?
Mascara.
What?
Oh my God.
The pharmacy is completely out of mascara.
You're kidding.
Completely. I don't know if there's anywhere else on the island to get it, but...
Every color?
Like, everything.
There stop the
is
press.
No mascara.
They are wiped out of mascara.
Completely.
Okay, so we have mascara shortage, and we used to have a toilet paper shortage, and how does all that work together?
So, I don't know if they go together.
Yeah, I know.
Because, you know, if you need something to wipe off your mascara, you're SOL.
Yeah.
But since you have no mascara, you got plenty of toilet paper left over? Is this
Maybe.
This is
I don't know. These are serious questions.
Yes. It's a movement of post-COVID and vaccination, and I'm coming out. NPR talked about this. There is a shortage of deodorant.
Oh, I read that. Yes, personal
There's
care.
There's a shortage of other personal care items. Like razors are going and stuff like that. And
we have to brush our teeth again because
we have to
smell our breath.
It was teeth whitener, home teeth whitening kits off the shelves.
You know, for a whole year, we just wore masks everywhere and nobody really cared.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Wow.
Boom.
Well, bummer. How about you?
Yeah. What about
Miss Heidi Skrypek?
I got lots of mascara. I can give you some.
Oh, thank God.
Well, Heidi Jackson, I know you've had some changes in the last few weeks with the COVID thing.
What do you mean?
Well, it seems like you lived for a year with nobody in the office.
Yes. Yes, we are back in the office.
Oh, wow.
100%. Yes. Cool. All of the staff has been vaccinated, so we're able to... We're in week number 3 of being in the office every day from 9 to 4:30.
I know, when I came in the other day, it was so busy and so happy, and people were just happy at their desks and happy to see everybody, and it was really it's really nice.
Yeah. Does it still feel fresh and or strange?
What? Being back in the office?
Being back in the office, yeah.
Yeah, I would say so. Not really. I think the first week did. I mean, we were all kind of in our own kind of weird transitionary mm-hmm. stage mm-hmm. of like, now I'm around all these people again. But by week two, I think we were all just settled in. So
and now we're just and on, now, and on
we
with all, it.
And we also discovered how much we love to be back in the office.
Do you?
Oh, yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, that's really good because a lot of people are talking about they don't want to go back.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know. And I think if we weren't local, then I think that would be another conversation.
That and the fact that, like you just said, your family. I mean, you have a really close-knit staff that's doing some wonderful things in the community, and they probably feed off of each other with the the excitement of it and the challenge of it and mm-hmm. and the new ideas and that kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, and you're dealing with some very intimate subjects. I think that mm-hmm. would begin to create bonding relationships.
Right.
You have to deal with other people's intimacy and therefore your own.
Mm-hmm. Well, right. And it's also the team mindset. And when doing remote, what had to be so deliberate all the time of like setting up these side meetings and these sidebars. Mm-hmm. And so now it's really easy to just pop in and say,
and make
hey,
a comment.
Yeah.
You know, what about
right.
this?
Yeah. Let's troubleshoot
that does make
this.
It easier. Yeah. Well, my COVID update, I really don't have one. I'm just really relishing the idea that I can see people without my mask. I still wear my mask a lot, obviously. I probably always will. But I'm just liking seeing mm-hmm. people out and about. I see a lot more smiles, which is nice to see, too.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Thriftway is now letting you bring your
own bags.
I need
them.
Everybody needs to know this because they
as of yesterday, I think.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. They haven't posted on their own page, but the word's getting out, and I'm so glad because I have way too many paper bags. Mm-hmm.
I asked the clerk yesterday, I was in there, and I asked her, I said, when are we going to get to bring our own bags back? And she said, as a matter of fact, today.
How about that?
Well, I don't have any with me. But that's good to know. Really good to know.
That is good to know.
So I read some interesting things this week again.
Yes.
For our tidbit section, and I kind of got hung up on an art theme. And how art can help heal lives. And, you know, there's that saying that art saves lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I love that. So, you know, a year ago, George Floyd died.
Yes.
A year ago today, right?
Yeah. Bless him.
Really?
So, I got a little choked up there.
Oh, and Biden met with his family today.
Yes, he did.
And that went really well. The family was really honored and said, Biden really speaks from the heart. And it felt good. And they're hoping, you know, police reform.
Yeah.
That act gets signed.
Well, the art that I wanted to talk about mm-hmm. comes from the George Floyd murder atrocity. And the title of the article, it's in New York Times. Mm. How plywood from last year's protests became art. And there is a woman in Minneapolis named Lisa Kelly who woke up from a nightmare. She'd been dreaming about George Floyd all year, and she woke up from a nightmare, cried out feelings of anger and hopelessness. She runs a self-help group for women of color. And she said nothing could quell that anxious, sad feeling and all the anger that she had in it. And she just kind of started thinking about art. And then she thought, what's happening with all those boarded up plywood art? Because there was so much graffiti and some of it was beautiful art. Some of it was awful, but it was. So she spent, I don't know how long she spent, but she collected over 200 of the panels that had been used to board up businesses. And they're now being stored in a temperature and humidity kind of environment so that they can decide what they're going to do with them. And it's taking place as well in Chicago and LA. I don't know about Seattle.
You know, I just looked up Seattle and what happened to the art from the CHOP. And they didn't have much to say about it. So I'm concerned because the street painting that was there at the CHOP. Did any of you go to the CHOP?
Yes.
The street, the way they painted or rendered the term Black Lives Matter.
Oh, it was so
was
beautiful.
With incredible art
it
on
was.
The pavement.
Yeah.
And I haven't been there to see whether it's still there.
Yeah.
I was hoping they would preserve it. But there's a story from KUOW that's fairly recent and doesn't really address it.
Oh.
So it is...
Well, maybe they haven't thought of it yet.
Looks like a couple of other pieces that were not on the street that were probably the plywood art.
Yeah.
But so much of that, bad and good, yeah, was sincere.
Yeah. Well, Kelly said that she didn't really know how to approach the owners of the businesses, you know, like, can I have your plywood, you know? But she said once she began talking to them, they were really receptive to the idea. And most of them talked to her about how they're just not used to having to board up their businesses. And, you know, then they were, a couple of them were pleasantly surprised at the beautiful art that, that took place on the plywood. And I just thought that was a really, really interesting. She said, she says, quote, "It was important because the time was important, plain and simple. They say artists speak to their time, and that's what we did. This is the medium that we chose, and we are loud about it."
Nice.
So I just thought that was really touching that they're doing that. And then some more art is there's a website called hyperallergic.com.
Hey,
hyperallergic. It's hyper, H-Y-P-E-R-A-L-L-E-R-G-I-C.
Hyperallergic.
Hyperallergic. Okay.
That's about art?
It's about art. And a woman whose name is Ms. Gomez Rejon was working at MoMA, Museum of the Met. And she came across a trove of recipes that were from medieval times. She started looking at them and looking at them. And suddenly she got, she's a cooking person and an artist and a guide. She's a docent at MoMA. And she decided that she was interested in what kind of food these people in these gorgeous paintings would have eaten at the time. And so she said the process of cooking is an art. And so she just started studying these paintings, and she wasn't looking at food in paintings. She was looking at color and texture and content. So her recipes are attempts to recreate, are not attempts to recreate the food from still lifes. Instead, they're about reinterpreting the art. She made a mango pineapple mezcal margarita inspired by the art of Rufino Tamayo. She drew from women with a fruit basket and man with a tall hat and just looked at the colors and thought about the colors and what kinds of foods had those colors. And then she made that mezcal margarita. And she's teaching historic recipes and is thinking about how art heals and food heals and let's do it all together. So she's collaborating with a lot of local people, and I'd like to follow her. I think it's very, very, very interesting. She, her thing is we need new ways to tell stories.
I love it.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Isn't that interesting?
What an imaginative niche.
I know. Because when I first started reading the article, I thought, well, she's, you know, we see all the big fruit baskets or we see the turkey or the dead goose or whatever. And I think, well, she's making that. But, but she didn't. She's just using color as her.
To inspire her recipes.
Yeah, to inspire, which I love. Love that idea. And then I think that was all I had.
There's, you were talking about George Floyd. There's a wonderful painting. Throughout West Seattle, you see these transformers on the corners.
Oh, aren't they great?
There's a great one of George Floyd in West Seattle.
I saw
it
the other day.
It's haunting.
It's haunting.
It is haunting.
His eyes follow you.
Yes.
Where is this? Where in West Seattle?
It's on the way to Fauntleroy.
It's on, it's kind of by Starbucks, I think.
Yep.
Maybe by that pizza place.
Yeah.
It's, oh.
That cross, it's right there. It's real close.
Junction.
Yeah.
Wow.
It is really striking. It's sort of, it does follow you. That's a really good way to put it. Because when you see it, you're like, you kind of gasp. Seriously, it's really good.
Yeah, it's very good.
In Magnolia at First Avenue North and Garfield, not George Floyd related, there's an artist named Stacy Milrani. She also has a gallery in Queen Anne. But over in her neighborhood, where there was a little free library, she turned it into a little miniature art gallery with little miniature people. And little miniature, her own, her original works, but they're all miniaturized. And so they're on easels in this gallery, and it's like little figurines with their arms folded, looking at the art introspectively.
Oh, how wonderful.
It's so cool. And so I just love that she did that. And it was early in the pandemic, and it just delighted neighbors who were, I mean, what was there to do early on? We just took walks.
Yeah.
We didn't want to be around other people. We just took walks, right?
Yeah.
And that's what there was. It was a big hit.
Oh, that's pretty
that
wonderful.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
Stacy Milrani.
Boom. Wow.
And then I, in Chinatown.
Okay.
On what, do you remember the name of the street? Chinatown here in Seattle.
Okay.
The ID, International
District.
International
District.
They're painting the streets.
Oh, they are?
Yeah. And I.
Awesome.
Shouldn't even talk about it because I don't know the details.
Like 12th and Jackson area?
No, it's a, I can't remember the name of the street. It's okay. It's a famous street.
Yeah.
In the old part of Seattle. But
Dearborn?
Nope. Mm. It's one I didn't know. It might be called something alley, but it's certainly not Post
okay.
Alley. I don't know.
Right.
I don't know. But anyway, that's going on too.
Ooh, that'd be cool to see.
And then have you guys have seen the chainsaw art in Vashon?
Oh, sure.
You know, the guy that's standing by the road. Well,
yeah.
I found out his story. I didn't know how this works, but his, so a long time ago, there was a schizophrenic man living on the island and everybody loved him. He was a fabulous guy. His name was Gary. And so, you know, old timers in Vashon can tell you all about it.
He walked up and down the highway a lot.
With his chainsaw.
Uh-huh.
And so now he's been...
yeah. Sounds petrifying.
It's a little unnerving.
Yeah. And now he's been memorialized in chainsaw art. Because that's Gary up on the highway that you see that's waving at you.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's who that is.
He got hit by a car.
Yes, he did. And that was pretty awful.
While carrying the chainsaw?
I don't know.
But that you know, doesn't have anything to do with what we're talking about, except that it's public art.
It's
just public art. And
but I found something about the International District art.
Yeah. Oh, good. What did you find?
It's called Maynard Alley Street.
Yes, that's it.
Boom. And it's there to memorialize and celebrate the vibrant Asian community in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
Oh, I just think that's wonderful. So we had an inquiry from a listener.
All right.
Yeah. This listener wanted to know about twists and turns in our individual lives. And what did she say? Oh, and how life may have changed on a dime. Like what might have happened and what was the catalyst? Anybody want to answer that?
You got one, Heidi?
I do. Do you want to go first?
No, you go. I can go second.
You go. And then I'll go.
All right. Okay. Well, for years, I did public relations and marketing to raise my children. I called that the dark side because I had to leave journalism. It wasn't paying enough to support my two children. So I became an international marketing and corporate communications PR marketing person, company hack person for years.
Which does pay really well.
Which does pay really well, yes. And it put my two kids through college. I came here to Vashon to become a freelance writer and on this romantic island, and I did that. And then I decided at some point that I really wanted to work for an agency. So I began working for a fancy PR agency in Seattle. I had always worked for corporations and particularly nonprofit corporations, so fancy was not part of my lexicon. But I worked for this wonderful PR agency in Seattle, and started coming at odds with the management because I kept telling our clients they didn't really have to spend that much money to do what they wanted to do.
Yeah.
That wasn't the whole purpose, raison d'être, if you will, of that particular agency. So we came to a crossroads, which meant that I left. And also had to sign a non-compete clause. Yeah.
Oh.
So I couldn't go back to anything like that.
In the trade.
Which was great.
Okay.
Because I discovered I'd been doing work that I really hated for years.
Yeah.
And now the slate was clean and I could do what I wanted. So I did a variety of things, one of which included caretaking for a woman during the last year of her life, which was incredibly fulfilling. I worked for a couple of companies here on the island, eventually going to the Park District to be their program director and eventually their executive director. And
best
then
they ever had, baby. Best they ever had.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And then I was a station manager for Voice of Vashon,
yes,
the first
for
one.
A long
so,
time.
So the twist was definitely a career change and a refocus
mm-hmm.
of my life's work. And mm-hmm. it was perfect. Best yeah. thing that ever happened to me.
That's a big one.
I went from gigantic corporate and I won't say who the government clients to Jane and her two dogs.
Mm-hmm.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, it was wonderful.
It's kind of a gut-wrenching industry and trade. It's you feel like you're just a whore trying to get press for your clients and
right.
and spin the messaging just so mm-hmm. doing those kind of things. And I've been there and I've done it, and I still am approached sometimes as a freelancer to do pitching. And I mm-hmm. sort of, I really need the money, I'll do it. But
oh, it's an awful job. It's an awful job.
Yeah. So well, I call it writing other people's words.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you have to kind of put yourself, well, actually, my business motto is putting your best ideas into words that work.
That's good.
Yeah, that's good.
And that's, yeah. you hear what they think and then you write what you know they need.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful.
And they say, oh, yeah, I said that.
I mean, you know, if you can channel it, that's good.
Yeah, yeah. It is. What
so
about
what's
you,
your
Heidi?
Twist, Heidi?
Oh, it's going to be a minute. So we're going to say thank you to our supporters, our underwriters right now.
She has to collect
Voice of Vashon thanks Windermere Real Estate for its support, making our community information programming and our emergency alert service possible. Find them on the web at WindermereVashon.com.
VOV programming support is provided by the Hardware Store Restaurant, serving great good food, free Wi-Fi, and signature cocktails in an historic 125-year-old building, the heartbeat of Vashon Island. On the web at thsrestaurant.com.
So my twist and my turn was living in Hawaii, previous marriage, came home. So I was a freelancer for a Seattle PR firm and a full-time writer at the Honolulu Advertiser, which is a Gannett newspaper, mm-hmm. working in the marketing department. I was a copywriter, heavy, a lot of work. But it was union. So you
oh,
left
good.
At a certain time every single yeah. day. They don't want you working overtime. So heading home, come home. My then husband is pretty intoxicated. And I've just picked up the children from the YMCA after school program. And there's a weird piece of paper folded on the TV. So I open it up and it's meeting minutes from a business that I am part of. My money's there is a small business that my then husband owned. And there are meeting minutes that have my name that I attended. And it is our other partner, who was his mother and our accountant, signing her life away and no longer being a partner of the business and a signatory on the bank. Something was not right with the business and she wanted out. So she said that I voted in, like on these meeting minutes, which were completely fraudulent, that I had said that was okay. Not okay. Because this was a person that made us buy the business. Anyway, this piece of paper was very pivotal and made a sudden turn, because I turned around and I was like, do you want to talk about this? What is mm-hmm. this piece of paper? And the response was, you don't want my mom going down with us, do you? And I said, you want to tell me what's going on? Because we sold our house in Bremerton to fund a business in Hawaii. And here we are in Hawaii and I have two little kids. What happened next was confrontation and me being pinned down with my then husband's knees, with his pants down, asking me to perform
something.
Oral sex on him.
Oh, God.
He didn't like what I had to say, and that was his way of getting power. And he put his hands over me to shut me up. And I was wearing a retainer and bloodied up my mouth, just like pushed on my mouth to Aww. Shut me up. And he did not get head that night. Am I allowed to say that on the radio?
I think so.
You said it already.
There was no head.
It's technical.
I cried. I ran through the house. I went to the phone. He ripped it out of the wall. I just didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to do. But in that moment, I was like, I can sneak out at night and grab the children and just ditch my new car at the airport and go to my dad's in San Diego. Like I was mm-hmm. I just felt so paralyzed by what the hell am I going to do right now? what am I going to do? So in that moment, in that event, I knew the marriage was over, or we were going to need to do a ton of counseling to try to right it. But it was clear to me that that person, he had picked his path and his alliances, and I was just collateral raising the children. And mm-hmm. I mean, there was a lot, but basically that person who had me freelancing in Seattle, I just said, you got a job for me full time? And she said, yes. And then I just told my then husband, I have a good job. If this business is failing, I'm going to get us set up in Seattle. He grew up here. I found a nice rental in the moment, and I went ahead and I did it. I came here, and in the months that followed, the revelation of how bad that business was horrible. It was horrible. So we both had to file Chapter 7, and because the debt was just absolutely enormous, but just having, and of course, guess who had to do all the work? Mm-hmm. Me.
Yeah.
So I had to fill out all the paperwork. So I was just anger. So anyway, it changed everything because we had this business in Hawaii and I was the Honolulu Advertiser copywriter. And all of a sudden I'm like, holy crap, we're in trouble here. I got to do something. And then holy crap, my husband's a jerk, a real jerk who cares more about his pride and his ego and his relationship with his mother than actually like confronting the fact that the business was going sideways. It was so red for so long. And I found out much later, like, where's the money? I was making six figures. Where's the money? It was always gone. And then I figured out what it was. So got to Vashon, changed my life, asked him to go to counseling. He refused. So I went by myself and the counselor was kind of like, hello,
what are you waiting for?
And I made the decision to divorce. Yeah. And it was really hard because the kids were 6 and 8. Mm. And I was just like, oh, I'm such a bad person because I'm going to leave him and break up the family and all that stuff.
It's an awful thing.
It's been fine. I mean, it was fine.
Yeah, and there you are.
You're fine now.
I know. I'm, you know, and I still got to figure out how to work through that stuff. But also, like, how was I so dumb? How did I not see it? Why didn't I push on him harder? Mm-hmm. I know. And it was just the perfect segue to talk to you. But Linda, do you want to talk about your pivotal moment?
No, I don't, actually. I think.
No, this is such a perfect segue to Heidi Jackson.
It's a perfect segue to Heidi Jackson. Yeah.
Domestic violence and Dove. Yeah.
Oh, my God. It's a horrible segue.
And
I'm
financial
so sorry that you dealt
with that. Abuse. And, oh, my God. Yeah. Like, it was always, there was always no money. And anyway, we have food for you that you need to eat. We need to fuel you for this discussion.
No. But yeah. eat. So,
yeah, thanks for listening.
That was brave to tell that story.
Thank you, Heidi. That's very brave.
Thank you.
To live that story.
I kind of want to cry because it's
know.
Very
yeah,
humiliating.
So do I.
Yeah.
But just the worst part was just that feeling of being completely just like, what do I do right now? I should leave right now. I should call the police right now. I don't know what to do.
And you didn't know what to do.
And I just sat there in the bedroom and I cried and you know, I just so many thoughts all night long. I was awake the whole night just going, trying like, what the hell am I supposed to do?
Mm-hmm. Heidi Jackson, I think that's probably something you run into a lot with dealing with domestic violence is women don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. And then there is Dove. For Dove.
Yeah.
So tell me about Dove.
Okay. Well, like as in the programs that we offer?
The kind of an overview because maybe we have some listeners who aren't familiar with what Dove stands for and what Dove does in the community.
Sure. So Dove stands for Dignity, Opportunity, Voice, and Empowerment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the tenets of our advocacy. And so what we are, we have three pillars of focus, one being advocacy services, which is like you, Heidi, like
that story.
Like, I mean, it's exactly what the type of calls that we get where people mm-hmm. are saying, well, what do you think the next steps are?
Mm-hmm.
So our job isn't necessarily to tell people what to do. Our job is to help prioritize the person's experience mm-hmm. and their priorities
mm-hmm.
and keeping those and say, well, what do you want to do right now? What do you need to do to feel mm-hmm. safe today? And then, you know, and then because sometimes you can't think even 2 days farther down the path. Right. You're just talking about right here, right now.
Right so here, just, right now.
Just yeah. depends.
What are the other two?
The other two are prevention education. So the only thing that research shows that stops violence before it starts is education. So,
and you're active in the teenage community, in high school.
Yep. We have peer-to-peer sex ed through teen council, and that is taught in all the health classes in the junior high.
Oh, good.
Or I call it junior high, middle school.
Middle school, I guess.
Yeah.
I grew up in a junior high.
I did too.
Yeah. And we teach in a few classes in the high school as well. Mm-hmm. So, and then we just hired another prevention specialist, and they'll be specializing in the younger age, families with younger age kids.
Oh, okay.
So when you
the other piece is the community advocacy piece, which I'm a firm believer in that it's not just primary prevention, which is stopping violence before the initial victimization, but it's also that even if you have been exposed, you still have a shot at changing behaviors or not being stuck in the stigma.
Well, let's talk about that for a second. What, in your definition, what is domestic violence? It's such a broad a term. I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be physical.
Right.
Abuse.
Well, and as what Heidi, you were talking about, is that abuse looks a ton of different ways. Financial abuse is very common, and but not always. And that's one thing, is that every single situation is so different. Because, but it's really, the definition is the abuse of power. It's abuse of power in order to gain control. So
right.
And power usually is financial, but not always. There's other abuses like litigation abuse. I mean, there are people who continue to have to meet their ex in court every 6 weeks, and they can't keep regular jobs because they are constantly in court to either protect children or protect some sort of agreement that has been established.
And the courts allow that to continue?
It becomes a job.
It does become a job.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's exactly what people say. It's like it's like a job. So they you will have people who have professional licenses and degrees and not be able to utilize it because they can't keep those jobs. They'll have to take
jobs.
Yeah, like a cashier's job because it has more flexibility.
Oh, my goodness.
And the court does not identify that sort of sequential abuse using the court as its weapon?
Well, yeah. I mean,
they don't see those cases.
Yeah, I mean, every case is so different. Sure. But I mean, I feel like I have to say that disclaimer all the time. But as a rule, there's a lot of loopholes that you can really manipulate.
Apparently,
And it's not to say that judges will sit there and they will, like, if it is an absolute waste of court's time, they will acknowledge that piece. But a lot of times, you can go through the regular legal channels and create quite a bit of disruption in people's lives and still just follow the pattern.
So if power is that important to you, if you are that determined to be in control or to have power over another person, there are all kinds of ways you can do it.
There's a lot of different ways. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when you're teaching prevention, I know that one of the things you do is help kids identify healthy relationships. And Heidi Skrypek, if you don't mind my using your situation as an example, how do you think Heidi might have prevented ending up in that situation? What might she have looked for? How would she have known?
Well, it depends upon Heidi's background. And if Heidi was in a situation where she was raised in an environment where there was a dysfunction in relationships and that was the model that she was really brought up to think is normal, when I'm talking about you in third person, okay, right in front of you.
No, it's okay.
But using Heidi as an example, uncomfortably in front of you, but is then they would not consider dysfunctional or abusive behaviors necessarily as red flags in their relationship that they're in, because that's what the way
you wouldn't recognize them. Yeah,
exactly. So what prevention, that's one example. So what prevention education idea, sorry, my mic, I'm trying to be
there. You're doing it.
You're trying to talk to everybody.
The prevention education model is the idea that we educate to show people that despite the fact of any experience that you have in your home, that here's the standards of what how you should be treated. And that everybody deserves to be safe in their relationships, both mm-hmm. in your family and in, you know, romantic relationships and in friend relationships. So,
I was raised with a single mom for a lot of years, and then she married somebody who was not a great model.
Yeah.
And she was always very reliant on others for money and that kind of thing. So it was always really important to me to make my own money because I just never wanted to have that situation. Mm-hmm. And I did, but I still didn't have a good male. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would hang out with my dad every other weekend, my actual dad. But there wasn't a whole lot of that. So I think that's really useful to say, it's not okay, XYZ. Mm-hmm. It's not okay, XYZ.
Right.
It needs to be taught.
And it's simple concepts. It's not a lot of rocket science. I mean, we have this one program called Lunchboxes. And when it's not COVID, we're in the cafeteria and we just play this little exercise. And it's you ask them a question and it's usually in the spectrum of like, is this a healthy relationship? So someone calls you 20 times in 3 hours. Is that healthy?
Mm.
And then you have, you know, tweens trying to determine of like, well, I think that's okay. And you're like, well, let's talk about why that would be okay or why that might be a little bit on the unhealthy, you know, but it's
that controlling.
But it's those little things that make big differences.
So. I'm just so happy to hear you doing that. I mean, I just think it's so important for the kids, young women, young men as well. And Dove's outreach is much bigger than Vashon.
Yeah, we do. We serve a lot of people in the Seattle area.
Mm-hmm.
We've definitely, that has been an evolution since COVID.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. How does that work?
Yeah, well, a lot of DV agencies right now are really saturated. And the big shelters are the last number that I heard was that there was 54 requests to one admittance.
Whoa.
Wow.
And the needs for other resources is really high. And so as they are on, as people are on waiting lists, we don't have a shelter here on Vashon, but we do have emergency housing and we have legal advocacy and we have safety planning. And so people have been calling us because we are available and we can help them at least do some safety planning while they're waiting for some permanent housing options or some shelter options.
Mm-hmm.
But these waits are months
long
in the waiting.
Heidi, not to interrupt, but can you give the phone number in case somebody's listening and needs some help?
Sure.
What she should call?
Our helpline is 206-462-0911.
One more time.
206-462-0911.
Thank you.
You know, that situation you describe, clearly domestic violence has increased during COVID. It sounds almost like a crisis situation.
Yeah. I hesitate to use the word crisis, but it is. It wasn't good. It wasn't necessarily good before the pandemic.
Well, right.
But yes, it's definitely a lot worse. And the levels of isolation from the isolating aspects of the pandemic has made it even worse to receive help or talk or get help.
So what about confidentiality on a tiny island like this? Mm-hmm. I know a lot of folks would have difficulty contacting Dove simply because they're not sure they can remain private or confidential. How do you protect people's confidentiality here?
Yeah, we have a very strict policy about that. And honestly, it's a policy we talk about right up front when anybody walks into the office. And we simply don't acknowledge that anyone has entered or exited our office. And we just have that standard. And we even tell people that if we see you out in public, we will not acknowledge you. I mean, if they choose to acknowledge us, that's one thing, but we won't acknowledge. Mm-hmm. And And we, yeah, we, everything that happens in regards to advocacy stays within these advocacy conversations, and that's where it remains. We don't keep files with any information on them.
Wow.
We aren't required by law to do so. Mm-hmm. And so if we're subpoenaed, the only thing that we could really share is the name on a file. Mm-hmm. But that's about it.
Mm-hmm. What if a Vashon person needs a safe house? What if they need to get out now?
Yeah, we have a relationship with Extended America, and so we can offer up to a month for a safe place.
Oh, good.
But that is an extreme situation. I mean, we're not able right. to offer very many of those. Yeah. But we are able to offer short term housing. Right. So,
can we talk a little bit about what about men? What about men in abusive situations? You know, we tend to think that it's always women.
Right.
And I think maybe it is usually, but I'm sure that there are men who have trouble as well.
Yeah, there is.
And do you find that on Vashon as well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And how is that different from a woman being abused? I don't know anything about it. Is it a physical? Is it the same parameters around abuse?
Oftentimes, yeah, mm-hmm. it's the same type of categorical. Mm-hmm. It can be. It's still the power and control dynamics. A woman can have can abuse control just like a man can.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
yeah.
I want to say the Dove Project was really helpful. I had a friend who just reappeared after 20 years and ran off with this guy who was a bad dude, and she stayed with him like a puppet. Like a dog for all these years, transiting countries all over the place, all over the world. He had groomed her to turn her out on the streets, and he was an international pimp. This is a true story.
Wow.
And she contacted me from Algeria, which was his hometown, because he had gotten really sick. So he had to be near his family in anyway. So she was stuck with him and she wanted out. And he was dying. He was like almost about to die. She had married him. Anyway, so I said, you know, you can stay here with us. It's okay. She said, what am I going to do? And when she got here, she was 95 pounds. She had fingernail marks and bruises all over her forearms from him. He would beat her with his cane. He was a lot older than her. He was like our dad's age. Anyway, I contacted the Dove Project, and the Dove Project was so helpful in getting her on her feet. Like everything from she needed to have a loaner laptop so she could do some internet research. She needed a job. She needed to figure out where things were. Set her up, you know, told her about the food bank, told her about how to get Apple Health or whatever that is, you know, and food stamps. And I mean, she had nothing but two suitcases and herself. But she was, I mean, that's just the other thing was setting her up with counseling and vouchers and vitamins and a visit to the doctor. Like she had nothing.
Wow.
And the Dove Project completely gave her a foundation. Yeah. And she's off at school and she's career driven and she's going to do it.
And she's doing well.
Kicking ass.
Oh, that's
so impressive.
Really,
and you know,
yeah.
I keep hearing, I know you, Heidi Skrypek, to be a strong woman. Mm-hmm. This sounds like a woman with a lot of strength. And I want you, Heidi Jackson, to tell us that there is, well, maybe tell us, what is the typical abuse victim? What does she look like?
Is there one?
Right.
Yeah,
right.
There isn't. It's anyone in any category. It's your next door neighbor. Mm-hmm. It's not what you think. It is everything that you you don't assume. It takes, I mean, so
yeah.
There's no typical.
And so what if one of us knows someone and we see that person is experiencing, or we suspect that person is experiencing abuse? How do we handle that? How do we first of all approach the person if they're not necessarily saying it out loud? And then what?
Well, the first question that you ask yourself is safety measures. You know, if you are observing something that this person is a recipient of behavior that could be hurtful, to tread lightly. You wouldn't want to just bring up a really obvious question in front of this person and their partner.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm.
It seems obvious, but you know, right. It's just a good, you know. But yeah.
So, are you still beating your wife? Yes.
Right, yeah, exactly. It doesn't seem like it's the not safest funny. Thing to potentially.
Not at the dinner party.
So, and then it's a matter of what your comfortability is. If you're comfortable enough to directly approach someone, is to find a time. If you're good enough friends with this person, you find a time to just ask, how are you? Is there anything I can do for you? Or you can ask about behaviors that you've observed and say, that seemed off to me. Or if it's something as simple as just checking in. And then if you don't feel comfortable with that level of direct contact, then potentially reaching out to a mutual friend who might be able to offer some assistance. Or and then it just depends upon what that person needs. And then to really listen to that and to not go outside that boundary, because a survivor will tell you what they need when they feel comfortable sharing that information. And if they're not able to share that information and you decide to go rogue, that could potentially be a dangerous situation. But I think that people get really afraid of just asking the questions, and there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with approaching someone and saying, are you okay?
I'm worried. Or are you okay? Yeah. I saw a little billboard this morning at the church, and it just said, ask somebody if they're okay today. Yeah. And I loved that.
Oh, that's so important. Because, we've got this.
Because we don't know.
Well, and we've got this silly American idea about minding our own business. But it seems to me also, when I say to my friend, are you okay? And they say, no, I need to have in my back pocket information about how to help them. I need to be ready to say, okay, here are some options. So study up on Dove.
On Dove. Yeah. So have you, Heidi? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, we do have some really great pamphlets at the office that are for friends and family. For people
great.
If you do encounter a situation where you are observing, it's just ideas on ways to.
And is your office open to the public?
It is.
Where exactly is it?
It is right behind the coffee shop, right next to Pandora's. And
right behind AJ's coffee shop.
It's a cute little house.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful office now.
We are going to take just a quick second for our underwriters. Be right back.
This portion of Voice of Ashon programming is brought to you by PSCCU, proud to be Washington's Green Credit Union, practicing socially responsible banking by supporting sustainability, job creation, local economies, communities statewide, and our environment. Learn more at psccu.org.
Can't do what we do without our underwriters, like Vashon Market IGA and Vashon Plaza. One block west of the main highway, where you can find everything your family needs, from fresh produce to kids' specials, legendary meats, wine, spirits, and movies. Open daily from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m.
Roasted. And we are back.
Well, here we are. Hello, everybody. So, Heidi Jackson, can you talk to me a little bit about how this past year has affected Dove? Have you seen increase? Like, I know nationally, domestic violence has increased in numbers.
Yeah.
And is it the same on Vashon?
It is, we've seen about a 25% increase in numbers since May of last year. That's when the tick up really started happening.
Is there such a thing as group support? Like there was Alcoholics Anonymous or Al-Anon? Or is there anything? Or is it such a private issue that people don't want group support?
No, I think group support is really helpful. On a small island, as you guys have already talked about, it's tricky. Because of, again, small island and confidentiality.
No secrets on Vashon.
And security issues well. So we have an online support group right now that seems to be meeting the needs of
that's
people.
Good.
I've actually am meeting with several domestic violence agency directors in the next couple of days to talk that work in rural communities to talk about ideas about other ideas for support groups. Because just trying to think of, you know, we do have some barriers, but, you know, just listening to what other people are doing, just trying to get some more ideas.
Well, you know, one of the reasons I asked that question, other than wanting to know, is that you have a story about an original support group in the slavery days and how that sort of evolved into today. So, Heidi, tell us a story.
Well, I was talking to Linda last week about this. Is the as we're working on our anti-racist policies within the office, one of the things that I don't really want to lose sight of is the fact that the racism within the women's movement. And so once the emancipation happened in the 1860s, really the Ku Klux Klan kicked, you know, became evolved into who they are. And they were actively raping black women and actively lynching, actively accusing black men of raping white women and lynching. And women, black women started meeting to support each other. They were meeting in under the veil of book groups and such. And then really when... from the 1920s through the 1960s, we really moved, we removed the black voice, and it became actually, they called it the white women's movement. And so it became effective. Yeah. It became, as rape culture was really still really predominant all the way up until about the 60s and the 70s when they started the civil rights movement and the Take Back the Night idea. Up until then, we really, effectively removed the black women's voice in the women's movement. And so in the late 60s and the early 70s was the first attempt to really kind of rectify that, rectify that and, or just start to. And so, yeah, that's the history of it.
I had no idea.
Well, I think it's important to keep that, in the forefront of, you know, my mind is I'm working with policy to be constantly, you know, making sure that we create an inclusive environment for everyone. So,
and with regard to supporting Dove, what can we in the community do to help Dove either raise profile or do more good works, or short of just, you know, talking about it in the community? What do you need from us?
Well, enthusiasm about the idea of shifting culture is always, is never something I'll turn away from. And yeah, just, I mean, we're always up for support. If you want to
so
pop
you feel,
website,
do you feel like the culture is changing? Do you feel like we're making some headway?
I think that, sure. Yeah. I mean, I think that we are, I think we have a long way to go. So,
define what you mean by shifting culture. What exactly are you addressing when you say that?
Well, for the longest time, I mean, really up until like the 1970s and 80s, really like rape was considered okay. And like it wasn't even until 1976 that they started even looking at legislation that said, well, if you are like defended yourself because you're actively being raped and you defended yourself and you by chance killed someone, you may not be guilty. I mean, that that idea was a new idea. So, so I think that we haven't really come too far, but we've gone we've gone from there. I mean, we're not there anymore.
So when you say shifting culture, you're basically saying a culture that is more understanding of what it is to be a woman or what it is to be a marginalized person one way or another, whether it be caste, class, or race, which is kind of, I'm coming to believe that race is a silly concept in the first place. So skin color would be it.
I think of the swimmers, there was a star swimmer or a white guy in
kind of collegiate level, and there was another young lady, Asian, and she was really drunk, and he raped her. And you saw this, you've seen this. Mm-hmm. He was, in court, the judge, he was given leniency because he's an upstanding young man.
He's really a good boy. He's really a good boy.
We don't want to ruin his life.
Right.
Right. And right.
Or damage his
sickening to me. And that woman, she overcame it with lots of counseling and she tells her story, but it's just, got a long way to go still.
Do you have
accountability?
Accountability?
Yeah.
Is that what you said?
Yeah. I mean, just a societal accountability is really,
and it
really
was
lacking.
Two young men in the alley saw it happening and broke it up. So at least, there was that, but yikes.
I remember that.
I remember that story now.
So, I mean, we need more interveners.
We need more men to get the idea.
Yeah. Speaking of interveners, what about the police? Do they...
We don't have very many.
No, we don't have
very many. Yikes. At any given time, what do we have?
Two
patrol corps?
Two or three. Yeah.
Yikes. On a good day.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think we need them that much.
You don't? Okay.
No, I don't. I think that there's a lot that's happening that, as we're, as we talk about defunding police, which is really reallocating funds for social management, if you will. That kind of money should go to organizations like Dove. It should go to organizations like BYFS.
However, I will say that, I was accosted about, 2 or 3 weeks ago? I think I told you guys about that. Mm-hmm. And it was horrifying to me. It's a mentally ill man that lives on the island, and he's known for anger issues. But he sought me out and yelled really horrible things to me while he was standing above me with clenched fists and spitting on me.
Wow.
It was awful. And I didn't know what else to do but call the cops. Mm-hmm. So I did, and I have to say that they responded immediately. They came over and took a report, and they were really interested. Mm-hmm. Questions were good. It wasn't a, geez, lady.
Yeah.
It wasn't that. It was very heartfelt and compassionate. So in asking about the police, I was hoping that that's the case for other people on the island.
It just depends.
Yeah.
And police are put in a pretty tough situation at times.
Yes,
because,
they are.
One thing about domestic violence, as you all well know, is that it's not always obvious when you walk into a scene. And it's as we always say, things are not always what they seem. So, so as they're trying to weed through the heart of the matter, sometimes they get it wrong.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily because they're a bad cop. It's just because they're just trying to weed through the details.
Well, and it's a slippery situation too. I mean, things are hidden and lies are told, and it's a hard place to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's new systems put in place with some community engagement officers that are really helpful. So.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad to hear that. So do you have any big plans for Dove for this year? What's the goal of the year now that we're back in the office?
Well, we're expanding. So we just hired two more people. So that's exciting.
Cool. Oh, I'm so glad.
Yeah. So we just were able to now have a part-time mental health therapist on the on staff.
Oh, good.
Whoa.
Yeah. Oh,
that's
wow.
Big.
I know.
That's
exciting. Great. And then we're expanding like I mentioned earlier, we're expanding a prevention program. Mm-hmm. And that's exciting.
It's very exciting. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Congratulations.
I think that's
so you're
wonderful.
Back at the office and you're expanding.
Yeah.
And it sounds like we're all ready to hire the mental health coordinator, all three
right
of
here.
Us. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
No. Okay.
Well,
I
think about my friend too, and that was the biggest thing. It was, physically, we can get you back to where you need to be with nutrition and vitamins and all your meds, and, she needed everything. But that was
the
biggest
thing.
Piece. Yeah. And she was set up with that. But I definitely see the need for it to be in-house. It'd be so much easier, and then you don't have to wait as long, and you're connected.
Right. And it's she has a specialization in trauma, so that'll
so
be
that's,
nice.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Well, we're almost out of time, and I just would like to encourage anybody out there who's having difficulty, whether it's a boyfriend, girlfriend, child, neighbor, I don't care. Make a call to Dove and they will help you. Because sometimes our little situations feel insignificant to us, or we're not strong enough or whatever. But Dove is there for you, and you can call and they'll be happy to hear from you.
I recommend going to the website. Also, there's some really yes. great information about definitions of abuse and the different categories. Mm-hmm. It's very enlightening.
It's a really good website.
Is it doveproject.org?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
VashonDoveProject.
VashonDoveProject.org. All together now. 1, 2, 3.
VashonDoveProject.org.
This is
we didn't do very well on
this
that.
This is KVSHLP.